This past Monday, in the U.S. at least, we celebrated Memorial Day. A lot of you were out of town. I hope you had fun. I was out at Lake Oconee after the service for a couple days with good friends. For a lot of people today, especially people who are in their 20s or their 30s, as most of you are, I'm sure, Memorial Day is kind of a bonus three-day weekend in between the 4th of July and Labor Day. I mean, that's how they look at it. And it also represents, of course, the official beginning of the social calendar going until Labor Day. And so now you can wear white. You know, I couldn't wear this suit 2 weeks ago. That kind of, some people think that stuff. But for people who are a little bit older, maybe over 50 or so, Memorial Day has a slightly deeper meaning. It's the official holiday, of course, where Americans remember the men and women who died in service to our country. I saw a documentary a number of years ago that really, really touched me. And they were interviewing a group of war veterans who were sharing their memories about fighting in the Battle of the Bulge, which, as you probably know, was one of the worst, the most horrific battles of World War II. And they were talking about their memories, both good and bad, memories of courage and memories of pain and loss of friends and everything. But as I was listening to them and watching them, all men who had fought in that battle, of course, it was amazing to me how people can have such different memories about the same identical event. Of course, and this is the point, it may have been the same event, but it was not the same experience for each one of them. It wasn't the same experience for them at the time, and it was not the same experience as the years went by. Because each man's individual experience was based not so much on what happened to them in the battle, it was based on what was going on inside of them while it happened and how those memories affected them as their life went on many years later. That's why it was also interesting to me how differently their lives progressed after the war, because they asked them those questions. Also, some of them kind of shrugged it off as an experience and went on, but some of them never ever recovered. Some of them remembered their war experience as the greatest experience in their life, like being in a John Wayne movie, and they always talk about it and brag about it, while others remembered it as a horrible experience, and they did everything they could to make sure it never happened again, not only for them, but for their children and their grandchildren. Some of them became millionaires and started huge companies and corporations. Some of them became homeless or alcoholic or committed suicide. Some of them even ran for office. Even people who were not there but were living at the time had their own experience of the battle. Now, we see the same thing in things like the Vietnam War, for example, and I'm sure down the road it'll be the same about Iraq. Vietnam has been over almost 40 years now, and you can still go into any bar or room in town and start an argument about it, no matter which side you're on. That's how people tend to remember it. Everyone remembers it in their own way, and everyone thinks that they're right, that their memory is accurate. The point is, the way in which any of our past experiences affects us personally is always determined not by what the experience was, but by how we remember it in here, not just in our head, but in our entire consciousness. Because no matter how dramatic any experience was, whether it was the moon landing way back in 69, or Dr. King's assassination in 68, or 9/11, which was an event all of us will remember, obviously, for the rest of our life, no two people remember it the same. In other words, it's never the actual events that shape our life. It's how we choose to think about those events in the present. That's what I'm going to talk about today. Now, memory is a very interesting phenomenon, both psychologically and spiritually. We've all heard the quote from Santayana, "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to relive it." And there's certainly some truth in that, because mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, we evolve by learning things, and memory is an important part of the learning process. Now, Dr. Holmes talks about memory in The Science of Mind, our textbook, and he says that memory is part of our subconscious. In other words, memory is actually a filter that our thoughts go through. He also tells us, in terms of those thoughts, that we can use our power to make decisions, our power to make conscious choices using our thoughts, by directing our thoughts in such a way that it causes certain experiences to happen in our life. That goes to the law of cause and effect. In fact, that's how we create this experience that we call our life. We direct the power of the one creative mind that we call God or whatever name we give it. And when I say that we direct it, it doesn't mean that we are giving God orders. That's not quite what we mean. I mean, we tell this power what we want to create, and we do so either consciously or unconsciously. And as we direct our thoughts and beliefs end up being reflected out there as our experience. Then, and this is the part that most of us don't do very well, we use our own God-given intelligence, tempered with a little bit of spiritual understanding and maybe a little inner wisdom, if we've picked up some of that, to see if the experiences that we have created in our life are working for us or against us. So we decide if the experiences we have are things we like or things that are helping us to grow. Now, if they aren't, then we chalk it up to experience, and we try not to repeat the same pattern of thinking next time. So the experience that we had, as we go forward, that experience becomes a memory that we put up on a shelf in our mind under the heading mistakes. Okay, that's what we do. And we've all got enough titles on that shelf to stock a good-sized library, okay, if we've been paying attention. That's part of being human, which is what I'm going to talk about next week. Now, that's the way it's supposed to work if we are enlightened, expanded, evolved. Things work out better when we accept the fact that any mistakes we may have made in the past, no matter how bad they were, are a normal part of our personal growth process, okay? We grow when we accept that anything that ever happened to us taught us something. That's why we need to figure out how to remember the things in our past, not whether to remember them, but how to remember the things in our past that we didn't like, the things that didn't work or the things that caused us pain. But we have to be able to remember just enough about them to learn whatever it is that we needed to learn and to remember that lesson. That's how we use our memories in a healthy, intelligent way. The problem is that's not the way that we usually do it, okay? All too often, we treat our memories like trophies. Okay, we may put them up on a shelf, but we also keep a spotlight shining on them, nice, soft, gentle blue light, you know, so that we can see them all the time. And we take them down now and again, and we polish them, and we show them to our friends, you know, look at this memory, look at this thing that happened to me. We talk about them for years. In fact, lots of our more dramatic memories even change and evolve, making us much more either the victim or much more important through the years. They become more elaborate. In fact, some people spend so much time on their old memories that they never get around to making any new ones. I know people like that, and so do you. And as a result, they never change and they never grow. Kennedy Schultz, Dr. Schultz, my teacher, the man who started this center 30 years ago, he used to like to say that some people have 30 years of experience while other people have 1 year of experience 30 times. Okay, that's the difference. Now, that's obviously not very creative. And as creative beings, which we are, that's not the way that most of us want to live. Now, there's no question that for each of us individually and for the planet as a whole, memory serves a useful purpose. For one thing, it keeps us from having to reinvent the wheel every few years. We can think back on something that did or didn't work and simply modify it a bit and then move from that point without having to go back through the whole process from the beginning. We can also use other people's memories to keep us from repeating their mistakes, or to give us ideas that we can piggyback on so we can create better ideas. That's how medicine and aviation and computers and science has been able to advance so quickly. The statement from Isaac Newton, you know, if I can see farther than other people, it is because I am standing on the shoulders of giants. That deals with memory. So memory can be a very valuable tool, but it also has certain inherent limitations. And one of the greatest limitations of memory comes into play when we give our memories, any of our memories, more attention or more credit when they deserve. Now, to understand how to use our memory in the best way possible, we first have to understand what it really is. We have to understand the process itself. Because most people think that the power of memory is in the experience that we remember, which is not true at all. In other words, some people seem to believe that the more traumatic a memory is for them, the stronger it should be and the more attention it deserves even after years have gone by. There's even a line in one of my favorite Simon and Garfunkel songs talking about when we get old, it says, preserve your memories, they're all that's left for you. And that's a lovely sentiment, but the reality of it is a little bit different. Where the power of any memory resides is not in the event, it is in the way we consciously choose to remember that experience and to use it in the present moment. You see, what we frequently find ourselves doing is we try to use our memories about our past experiences, whether recent or way back, to justify or shape our present circumstances, both the external circumstances and the internal circumstances, the things that are working and not working, and the things that affect our feelings and emotions. And that doesn't work very well at all. In fact, that's sort of like trying to find our way around Atlanta today using a map from, say, 1965. That's kind of what it's like. Now, at the time, if we were here then, the information that the map gave us was useful and it was probably fairly accurate. So the things that it told us to do, turn right, turn left, were very closely connected to the results we were getting or not getting. Are we finding the place that we want to find or getting to where we want to go? But today, if we use that old information, no matter how good a condition the map might be in, and no matter how long we've had it, it's not only not useful, it's probably going to get us lost. Okay, good information, but no longer relevant. So in terms of the spiritual power behind our memories, here's how we need to start thinking about this. Dr. Holmes writes in The Science of Mind that everything in our memory is an unconscious operation of what was once a conscious thought. It's an unconscious operation of what was once a conscious thought. And let me explain what he means, because this is an extremely important concept to understand if we want to use our conscious mind to create the experience that we choose. It means, quite simply, that our memories are always in the present. Our memories are in the present. Now, the events are in the past, either an hour ago, a month ago, or 20 years ago, but our thoughts and our beliefs and our opinions and our assumptions about those events are always in the present. And that's because our mind, just like the one universal mind that we are all a part of, only works in the present. We can think about the past, but we can't think in the past. We can think about the future, but we can't think in the future. Because the action of mind, the creative action of mind, is always in the here and now, because that's the only place we can possibly be. Now, the reason this is so important is because the only thing we ever really have control over in our life, and I know there are at least a few of you who are control freaks, all right? Let me see a few of us who are control freaks, anyway. The only thing we have control over in our life, the one thing, is what we are thinking right now, and right now, and right now, and right now. That's it. That's what we teach here. Of course, the good news is that's all we need to have control over to create a life that we enjoy. The truth is nothing in the past ever affects us. If we're being honest with ourselves, it's always our present belief and attitude about the past that causes all the trouble. So our response in the present, what we're thinking about it, to some situation that we went through years before, including the thoughts and the emotions that we had at the time, the fear, the anger, the despair, those emotions were probably perfectly appropriate at the time while we were going through whatever it was, but the pain that we felt then isn't necessary anymore for two very obvious reasons. First of all, the event is over and done. It's not happening anymore. That one's obvious. And secondly, we are not the same person that we were when we went through that experience or had that response. Hopefully, we've grown. Hopefully, we're stronger. Hopefully, we can handle it better now. Unfortunately, there are still people, including some of us on occasion, who refuse to let go of the memories that are no longer serving them. Their mind is closed and the door is locked. So their life decisions that are extremely important on a daily basis are still being made in the present because that's the only place decisions can be made, but those present decisions are based on the thoughts and emotions that they picked up years before and keep repeating. It's kind of like people who are still stuck in the disco era, okay? You know, they've got these vinyl records of the Village People at home, and they keep playing them on their old turntable, you know? Even though there's great music now, and these things are way back in the 70s, they keep choosing to play them over and over again, and that's the experience they have. What's interesting is this idea of holding on to the past is true for people whose past experiences were very difficult, whether they went to war, whether they were divorced, they were abused, bankruptcy, any of the things in the past, but it's also true about our good experiences. Even those can be a trap. I mean, as we all know, there are some perfectly nice, lots of perfectly nice, pleasant, relatively normal people who blame all their current problems on the fact that one of their parents was an alcoholic, or that their spouse or partner ran off and left them a number of years before. They even have organizations where they bond and share their experiences with other people, like adult children of alcoholics, or they take on a socially recognizable label declaring themselves to be a casualty of divorce. Now, the author, the French author François-René Chateaubriand, what a great name, French name, you gotta love that. I wonder if he was a vegetarian, Chateaubriand, very interesting. Anyway, he said this, only partially tongue-in-cheek. He said, this is great, memory is often the attribute of stupidity. It generally belongs to heavy spirits whom it makes even heavier by the baggage it loads them down with. Very, very interesting, okay? But if you think about it, the same could be said about those people who talk about what Bruce Springsteen called glory days. Anybody familiar with that song? These people are always talking, even when they're in their 50s, about the joy of high school or their first boyfriend or their first girlfriend. Because as they remember it, those were the best days of their life, which doesn't say much for the life they have now, which explains why they think about it that way. So they don't try to, you know, they don't want to try anything new because they believe nothing can ever be as good as the way things were. So in either case, whether the memory is bad or good, those people are allowing the memories of their past to control both their present and their future. Now, there's nothing wrong with thinking this way. There's nothing wrong with belonging to these organizations that help people. I'm not criticizing that. It's just a very limited way to think. It's a misuse of our creative power. It's a failure to recognize or to make use of our divine potential that we all have to grow beyond wherever we were before. Too many times, I think, we allow ourselves to be defined by our memories. And that causes us to describe or define ourselves in certain ways, both to ourselves and to others. The sad thing is, sometimes we automatically accept those descriptions as true simply because in our memory, that's the way we've always been. So when we say things like, I'm shy, I'm clumsy, I'm no good at math, I can't sing, I'm boring, those kind of things, and I hear a lot of people saying that way about themselves, if we believe any of those things about ourselves now, it's not because they're necessarily true, it's simply because we are holding on to memories of some past experience that both built and reinforced those beliefs, and we keep recreating them. Maybe we were singing along with our radio, and our father or our brother or our sister said, shut up, you're ruining that song, so we never sing again, okay? Some of us probably shouldn't sing again. Anyway, maybe we flunked a math test in high school. Maybe somebody stood us up on a date, somebody we had a real crush on, or a classmate made fun of us because we wore braces. So even today, we're embarrassed to smile. While any one of those events could have, and perfectly normally could have, hurt or humiliated us back then, they have no power over us now unless we continue in each present moment to give them power, which is exactly what so many of us do. But we don't do it consciously. We don't, because we're not that dumb. We do it by default. We do it out of unconscious habit. We just accept something as true because we have not taken the time to examine our memories and to choose the ones we want to keep and choose the ones that we need to throw away. And because we don't do what we need to do, all those untrue and unnecessary memories keep showing up in our life, and they will continue to do so until we consciously decide to change what we remember and what we believe, both about ourselves and about the past. You see, our memories, because they are part of the filters our thoughts go through, are an integral part of the creative process. Not the past experiences themselves, but the way they become attached to our present thinking. For example, if I had been abused as a child, I wasn't, but that's probably one of the most terrible things that could happen to anyone. I know some of you probably even experienced it. That may have been and was a terrible experience, but that experience should have nothing to do with who I am now. And if I can get clear about that, I'm going to be fine. Because we are now and always, every one of us, a perfect creative expression of a power that's always creating all things new. That's the truth about us, no matter what happened in our past. However, if I am constantly focusing my attention and my energy, including my emotions and my self-judgment, on my present thoughts about the abuse that I suffered so many years ago, I can and will create and recreate all of the fear, all of the anger, and all of the helplessness that I felt then, and I will inject those past emotions into whatever is happening in my life now, just like injecting poison into a vein. That's how it affects our life. Even though it's virtually impossible that we would ever recreate that same experience, I am at some level when I do this, choosing my present state of mind, which by its nature is infinitely creative. That's what makes us suffer. That's what keeps us trapped. That's why Elbert Hubbard, the great philosopher, not L. Ron Hubbard, the Scientology guy. This is Elbert Hubbard, okay? Different guy. He said, a good memory may be a good thing, but the ability to forget is a token of greatness. The ability to forget is a token of greatness. Now, another way of saying this is, if we use our memory to recreate a thought pattern in consciousness of ourselves based on what we remember about back then, even when we look in a mirror and see a strong, successful, self-assured grown-up, we will still feel in here like a helpless child. And we're going to feel that way as long as we allow that pattern to remain. If, however, we do what we are able to do, which is to constantly choose through prayer, treatment, meditation, whatever we use, to create a pattern in our mind where we see ourselves as a powerful spiritual being who is strong and loving and forgiving, that's what's going to be reflected in every other area of our life, every job we do, every relationship we're in, and every single cell of our body. Now, our past is still going to be there, that's obvious, but it won't have any power over us here. That's how we take control of our present and our future. Now, one final thought. For some strange reason, when we look at our past, we think that the emotions we felt and the event are inseparable, that they are one and the same. With a lot of our memories, we think that a lot of people think you can't remember the event without remembering the pain that went with it. And since we haven't figured out yet how to erase memories, except in the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, I think they were doing that, we can't help but suffer every time that event crosses our mind. When someone mentions their divorce, we think about our divorce and we feel the pain. When someone talks about their business failure, we think about ours and we feel the pain, yada, yada, yada. So maybe it's time, I think it is time, that we realize that the two of these things, the memory and the pain, are not really connected except in our mind, okay? And here's a very simple example. How many of you have ever hit your finger with a hammer or something like that, okay? Did it hurt? How do you know? Well, I remember being really upset at the time. Does it hurt now? Okay, unless you did it this morning, maybe it did, okay? It doesn't hurt now, okay? The memory and the pain don't have to go together. You can have the memory without keeping the pain. That's a simple example, but it relates to all the other tragedies and events in our life. We may not be able to choose or to change what happened, but we can choose what aspect of them we want to remember as long as we also remember what we need to forget. That means instead of dwelling on someone's death, we can choose to remember a life well lived. Instead of remembering the pain of illness, we can choose to remember the healing that came after or the health that preceded it. Instead of remembering the anger and the fear, we can choose to remember the love. We are the only ones, and I mean the only ones, who can decide what shape our memories are going to take. And as we start to put those memories in their proper place, as we learn to keep the lesson but to let go of the stuff that's weighing us down, we're going to find that we can move forward in life a whole lot easier without dragging around a whole lot of worn-out ideas that aren't doing us any good at all. And as we do this, we will probably discover, to our great delight, that it's actually a much easier way to live. So maybe it's time we gave it a try. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Let's take a few moments for ourselves. Take the ideas that resonated, either good or not so good. Take the ideas that really touched you. Take them as your own. And let's recognize that I am the first cause to my experience. I am the individual expression of a power that creates all things. And because of that, the way I think, the way I see the world, the way I see myself, and definitely the way I see God as a creative power, that affects what happens in my life. But there are also other people creating around me. We are all intertwined. There is history of the people around me. There is my own personal history and every other person's personal history. And all these things moving together may sometimes create experiences in our life where we do not see a connection. When I do not see the connection, I place my power on how I remember that event, what I learned from it, and where I go from there. I release what I don't need, and I rejoice in what I have been given. That is why I look at my life gratefully. I look at all the events of my life, good and bad, and I express gratitude for who I am now. And who I am now is constantly changing and evolving and getting better as I allow myself, in my present thinking, to see myself for who and what I am, a perfect idea in the mind of a loving God. So as I recognize this, this is the way my life begins to move. I become unencumbered, releasing those things that no longer serve me. I clear my mind out just like clearing a room. I open the windows, I let in the air, and I let out the dirt, the smoke, all those things that cloud my thinking. So I invite you to take a few moments now in the silence of your own mind. And in this silence, think for a moment what is flowing through your mind. Is it the excitement of the present? Is it excitement about the future? Or is there any fear or anger from the past? And if there is, take those memories, pat them on the head, and send them on their way. Take these few moments for yourself in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth, we release the old, welcome the new, and begin creating in this moment the life that we want to live. This is our truth. We accept it, we release it into consciousness, and let it go. And so it is.